Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Oh, it is going to be a great one. The Early Line is live right here on Sports Grid on a Monday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh, I'm joined by Donnie Wrightside, DRS. Two big-time hours to deliver this morning for the people.
Nah, fantastic stuff, man. So much to go over from the weekend there, from the Kentucky Derby to the NBA to the Stanley Cup. And as I like to say, new week, new money, and it's time to get it on.
No doubt. Let's waste no time here then. The Sixers even it up in overtime. Harden leads the way. It's a 116-115 final. Marcus Smart with the would-be made three. Did not get it off in time. 42 for Harden. 34-13 for Joel Embiid. And we're even through four games.
Exciting game all the way through. Had the big plays, the highlights, the bad plays, and also some questionable calls from the referees during that game. But the Sixers prevailed. It's 2-2 now, heading back to Boston. Best of three with Boston two games in their own building.
At the end of the day, the Sixers couldn't be in a better spot than they are now. It doesn't mean they're going to win the series, but through four games, if you would have told a Sixer fan, hey, it's even,
yes,
all of them would have been, oh, this is great, including, of course, diehard Sixer fan Micah Parsons. We'll get into that a little bit later. We also last night saw another series evened up, and that was between the Phoenix Suns and the Denver Nuggets, 129-124. Some people were not looking to rally the valley. Some people had given up all hope on Phoenix Suns futures. Others, well, they always believed in a Kevin Durant, Devin Booker 1-2 punch being able to make this a series, and it certainly now is back on as we are tied up here as well, Donnie, after four games.
Let's welcome into the Suns bench to the 2023 NBA playoffs with Landry Shamet. 19 points out there. Fantastic stuff. That's what you need. And how about this, Kevin? 36 out of Booker. 36. I've never seen anything like this. Both of your superstars must get close to 40 with a chance to win. Not a guaranteed win, a chance to win. Why? Because Jokic drops 51 in a loss. I don't know what to be more stunned by. The 51 in a loss, the 36. Landry Shamet coming off the bench. I don't know. Awesome game. But yes, rally the valley.
There's a lot to get to there, but if you give the quick bullet points, the bench showed up because Monty's now finally allowing them to play basketball. KD and Booker both seem unstoppable, but nowhere near as unstoppable as Jokic, who is now the leading scorer in this series. And oh, he might sneaky miss game five because he pushed the owner of the Phoenix Suns. Again, there's a lot for us to get to as it pertains to Suns Nuggets. Elsewhere in the association, the Lakers, for the second time this postseason, beat a team by 30. 127-97 Saturday night. The Lakers absolutely crack the Golden State Warriors. AD showed up, 25 points, 13 rebounds, 4 blocks, and once again was the best player on the floor.
News to Golden State, Steve Kerr and the rest of your team. It's not the regular season. You're not taking maintenance games and just saying, it doesn't matter. Well, it's on the road. No, it actually matters now. And this is the reason why myself and some people out there, probably including Kevin as well, don't believe in the Golden State Warriors. If you can't win on the road consistently in the regular season, you're not going to flip the switch. And don't give me the Sacramento series where guys were injured. The Lakers are a formidable opponent, and this was not a 127-126 game. They throttled the Warriors.
They absolutely did. And what's even more incredible about that is this was an 11-point Golden State lead in the middle of the second quarter. And somewhere along the way, the Warriors convinced themselves the game was over. Yeah, it was. Just not the direction that they needed it to be. Radio audiences here on a Monday morning. The early line on Sirius XM channel 159 Sports Grid Radio on and popping. Knicks, Heat. Uh-oh. Here's the thing, man. The thing that the Knicks were able to do successfully in Game 2 was have Jimmy Butler not be on the court. That strategy didn't work in Game 3. He was back, led all scorers with 28, and the Heat dusted the New York Knicks 105-86 to take a 2-1 series lead.
I mean, the Miami Heat won by 20 points in this game, Kevin. They shot basically 20% from three-point range. I don't know what's going on with the Knicks, but if you ask the Knicks fans, they're going to face the Heat in the second round. They probably would be partying out there, and they're not partying at all. But also, Kevin, is this series even happening? Every other series is so much fun, and this series here continues to go under the totals. Come on, man, stop it.
No, no, this was the first. Here's the thing. I know that you want nothing to do with any Knicks series. This is the first one that's actually
no
gone
208s,
under.
No. If you're not over 220, I don't even care what the closing line was.
It's an under?
Under the total. Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, an interesting take there. Maybe you might be leaving money on the table, but also you don't really care about that because you're doing big business. By the way, Butler and Bam outscored Brunson, Barrett, and Randall. That can't. Yeah, it's a losing recipe, man. Kentucky Derby style. Mage gets it done. 16-1. Donnie, I'm sure a big moment for you in the house there as someone who's been following Mage's career all the way up to this point.
Now, look, so some people would have said, hey, man, let's step it up. It's Mage at this point. Who knows? But Mage wins at 16-1 here. And by the way, how do you even bet the Kentucky Derby? Like, every horse was basically the same odds, it appeared to me. I don't know. 22 horses out here. You got to pick one of them? I don't know how it's done. I really don't. Did anybody win?
I mean, what... Is it Maggie? I mean, let's start to really the important questions there. I mean, well, look, 16-1 is 16-1, so shout out to the Mage, Maggie, Maggie fans who got the job done at the Kentucky Derby. Ice, oh, no. Oh, no, Toronto. Early lead, yikes. Overtime, no good. The Maple Leafs are down 3-0 to the Florida Panthers, DRS.
Not good news to our friends in the six up north here. I would never have saw this come. You went from actual favorite to win the cup to now 27-1, which is last place in the odds to win the cup.
It's real bad. Quickly, in Major League Baseball, the Yankees looked like they were going to have a big win against the Rays.
Goodness.
And then for the first time all year, Gerrit Cole got absolutely lit up by Tampa Bay, and the Rays win another series. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right here on the early line, we begin in Philadelphia. The Sixers even it up against the Boston Celtics, 2-2, 116-115, the final score. And the takeaway, I think, at this point in this series is that you need to reevaluate both of these teams. The Sixers deserve more credit than they have been given. Philadelphia spent all season long being in the race with the Celtics and the Bucks near the top of the Eastern Conference. They have the league's MVP in Joel Embiid. Harden right now, while it's a mystery, it feels, I guess, which version of him is going to show up, has had two games as good as anybody's two best games this postseason. Yes, the in-between of that was two horrendous games, but Harden's still showing that he can reach a certain level. Legitimate guys around that big two for them, whether it be Maxey, Tucker, Tobias Harris, that can step up on a given night. The Sixers should not be booked like they are multiple tiers below the Boston Celtics. But for Philadelphia, there are plenty of people who probably even had respect for them, but just felt that this was a bad matchup and really felt that Boston was just the best team in the NBA and probably with some distance, because I would fit that description. And as we now are 10 games into this Boston postseason, it is time to reevaluate the Celtics. They have a great roster, but they are not a great team, because what has become clear for Boston is their rookie head coach in Joe Mazzulla is a problem. He is in way over his head. And you can say, well, he's a rookie. What do you want him to do? One, Ime was a rookie last year. Not a good excuse. Two, irrelevant. You can give them all the time you want in the world. But the Celtics are the favorites to win this championship, this Eastern Conference, and this series. And Joe Mazzulla is not going to randomly figure this out by game five, by next round, by the finals. The Celtics, I still think, top to bottom, have the best roster in the NBA. And they are better than Philadelphia. And I still think they win this series, Donnie. But when we now evaluate these two teams, Philly needs to be bumped up a bit in perception, and Boston needs to be brought down.
You're right. Let's start with Mazzulla here being their head coach, right? Apparently, they have 19 timeouts saved up for Game 5, so that should really come in handy for Joe Mazzulla, who says, I take pride in taking two timeouts into the last minute, even if it hurts us during the game. Sensational thought process here. Bit you again where you didn't call a timeout, set up a play, move the ball into the front court here. You allowed that to go. And, oh, well, how about this, Kevin, right? The final shot of the game, what happens here? You're about a second too late. Why? Because you walked the basketball up the court and couldn't get into your set fast enough there. That's a loss on the head coach. But you're right. I love the way you're approaching this series here, because for me as a fan, game one, quarter number one, I fire a tweet out, Kev, that basically said, I'm not even going to be able to enjoy this series. I don't know when Joel Embiid's coming back, but the Celtics are going to be able to do whatever they want on offense because the Sixers have no rim protector here. Fast forward to game four. Now, if you watched in the fourth quarter, Joel Embiid was gassed, but he played 46 minutes. He has all his repertoire back here. He's moving extremely well. He's blocking shots and had the biggest assist of the game to James Harden in overtime, which allowed for that three-point shot. You're right. Reevaluation is needed, because even on my end, where I looked at this going, this is going to be a gentleman's sweep here. Because if Joel Embiid shows up at 50% in game three when they're already down 0-2, what's the point in that? Joel Embiid showed up in game two, knocked the rust off. Game three had a little bit more legs. And game four, even though he was gassed in the fourth quarter, it's apparent he's back to his MVP-level self here with points, with rebounds, with assists, and everything going forward. And it looks like there's no loss for the wear and tear, Kevin, either, heading into game five. It's a three-game series with both teams looking to be completely healthy here. You're right. It's time for reevaluation. This is no longer the Sixers are going up in game five to get slaughtered, and we hope they can win in game six to force a game seven. There's legitimate thoughts here in Philadelphia now. You can go to Boston and win a game. Why? You did it without Embiid, and James Harden was fantastic. Two wins for the Sixers, two right on James Harden's head itself here. He was fantastic yesterday.
And we'll get to Harden more in a moment, right? But this is the first time you're seeing any ounce of respect given for Philly in this market, okay? Sixers plus a game and a half, right? Meaning that they either win the series or force a game seven, minus 176. This market yesterday was plus 2.5 games. They were basically saying, here's Boston to win the next two. And the odds were not as strong as this. It's the first time we've seen any Philly respect. And if we get to a game seven, again, I picked Boston to win a title. I'm not moving off of that at this point in time. I still think that they have enough talent here and are a good enough matchup against Philly. But if we get to a game seven, that's when you go, hold on a minute. We have the MVP. They don't. Embiid can go for 50. Their best guy having a shaky postseason all of a sudden in Jason Tatum. And hey, maybe Harden can just continue to answer the bell. Because James Harden right now is having one of the strangest four games that any player has ever had in a series. For two of these games, James Harden looks like Houston MVP Harden. These are two of the best games of his playoff career, game one and game four. But sandwiched in between that are two of the worst games in James Harden's playoff career. A stretch in games two and three where he shot 5 for 28 from the field. And truly awful performances. But the thing is, if you are the Sixers, DRS, and now you're sat there saying, look, we're going to have to win in Boston at some point. We know that we're going to have to win game six in Philadelphia. That's obvious. We know that we're going to need that basketball game. But if we can just get one more huge game out of Harden, that's all it's going to take. And for the first time in a long time, I actually think to myself, if we have three more games in this series, which it feels like we do, one of them, Harden will be great again. He has another awful game coming for him because that's just kind of what it is right now. But the fact that I actually think we have one more great Harden game on the table for Philly, that feels like the first time we're saying that around Harden in Philadelphia since he's arrived.
And this is what you need, though. This is what you got James Harden for. And I know there have been flashes where it doesn't look like he has the lift. He's a little bit slower here. But that really wasn't yesterday. When you see the offensive James Harden game plan where it's, you know what, I'm not just going to continually settle, Kevin, for step-back three-point shots. A couple times in the fourth quarter, it looked like he was setting that up and then going to the rim and finishing at the bucket. That is what you want because that collapses the entire defense down. And also the ability to want the basketball at the end of a game and also to hit those late three-point shots here. He's been unbelievable. And yes, the Celtics are a better overall team than the Philadelphia Sixers. They had a better season. They owned the Sixers this season once again, and they were a healthy team coming in with home court advantage. And you need performances where superstars not only play their average, Kevin. Hey, look, Harden had 27 points, 11 assists, and 6 rebounds, and they lost. No, it's to take your ability up even higher where the Sixers are looking to stave off a team, making a comeback. Ooh, James Harden, three-point shot, a step back there, a layup in the lane, or even at the end of the basketball game, slowing the clock down, getting to your corner, and knocking down an open three-point shot. Everything worked out well, and still yet, the Sixers only won by 1 point. It was one of those games, Kevin, where I watched Jason Tatum hit a jump shot from about 18 feet away under 1 minute to go in the first half for his first 2 points here. So it's one of those where you take a look at the second half and go, if the Sixers don't win a game where Jason Tatum basically went scoreless for an entire half, I don't know what to think about. They won the game, which is the most important thing. And also, if you look at Doc Rivers and what he was saying in the post-game press conference, he's like, what did we do in the fourth quarter? Why do we have great offense and all of a sudden start our sets with like 7 seconds to go with James Harden holding the basketball above the three-point line? That needs to be corrected there, but the Sixers got the dub.
They absolutely did. Look, Harden in his first 16 Sixer playoff games had one game with over 25 points. Now he has two 40-point performances in this series. It's stunning. To get to Tatum, here's the problem right now that Boston has. One, Tatum is a bit unreliable still in the postseason. It's relative, but Tatum finished fourth in MVP voting. He's not playing like that level so far during this postseason. But the other problem they have is they have a guy in Boston that the Sixers have no prayer against right now, and Jaylen Brown. Luckily, though, he's playing very passive-aggressive, doesn't want to be a Celtic anymore. It's clear as day, and he just keeps deferring. Donnie, he's averaging 25 a night on almost 60% shooting, but he, every single time the game comes down the stretch, goes, here, you take the ball then if you really want it, which is working great for the Philadelphia 76ers. A lot to get to. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We put Sixers Celtics in the rear view for the time being because Phoenix Denver yesterday, oh my goodness. There's so much to digest from this series, but you're crazy if you think I'm not ripping a swell I told you so to start this off. Donnie Wrightside, you bet the Phoenix Suns win the NBA championship, and you didn't cash out, which credit to you because we know many who would have, but you jumped ship. Mentally, you were gone. You wanted nothing to do with this Phoenix team, and I told you don't give up. Because they could withstand Chris Paul's absence for at least two games in Phoenix. Because losing in Denver isn't all that bad. And they were heading back home with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. And these guys are playing 45 minutes a night. So it's not like that's going to be new to them. And they can even this series. And here we are with an even series. And I know that a lot of people, I don't know about you, but a lot of people go, well, I mean, if it takes 80 a night from Booker and no. You can't do that when Nikola Jokic is going out there and averaging 40, 15, and 15. Nikola Jokic right now is the best player in the world, having the best games of his career, and it's not enough right now to beat the Phoenix Suns. Everybody is playing at a phenomenal level right now in this series. Home court has been the difference, DRS. You jump ship on the Suns, but now it's 2-2. Are you back? Are you liking Phoenix here? Still a slight dog in the series.
From a rooting interest, yes, I'm liking the Phoenix Suns. But to win the series, I'm still not up on it because it's still going to be a best of three here with two games in Denver in elevation with Chris Paul probably not coming back. And who knows what we get out of DeAndre Ayton. Like, that's just the facts of the matter here. Now, if you would have told me before the series it would be 2-2 going back to Denver, I'd say, what'd they do? Split out in Denver, split in Arizona. But then again, you'd still have a healthy Chris Paul. That's what I worry about. But if I'm going to get, you know, a bench performance like you saw yesterday, which included four guys, 5, 8, 19, and 8, when apparently before that it was like, if anybody can get a bucket on the bench for the Suns, that would be a minor miracle. But here's what I like about the Phoenix Suns, and just particularly yesterday, Kevin. What do you get on the Phoenix Suns about guys? You're elite shooters. I understand that your mid-range game is phenomenal, but the NBA game, you must mix in some three-point shots to keep those analytics on the right wavelength. You take a look at the Denver Nuggets, 7 of 22. You actually got outshot, 13 of 29 for the Phoenix Suns here. If you're going to give me close to 33s a game out of Phoenix and make a good clip, you're going to be in these games. Was I excited to wake up and see that it was a 129-124 game? Yes. Was it crazy to see that Booker and also, you know, Kevin Durant going into the mid-30s? No, because that's what they do. But the fact that Jokic had 51 points in that game and they still lost certainly was eye-opening right now. The prospects are better, obviously, Kevin, than what they were just 4 days ago when it was a 2-0 series. So you got those good vibes going back, but you still have to win in Denver, which they're the best home team in the NBA, and still without Chris Paul and your superstars in elevation playing close to 40 minutes. That's a worry. But also, you can actually take this as a badge of honor moving forward. If the Suns are able to knock off the Nuggets in this round with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker playing that many minutes, then getting Chris Paul back, maybe there is a silver lining in the equation right now. But all I'm going to rest on my laurels on this one is, if Phoenix can produce, I'm not even talking about, Kevin, you know, 19 points out of Shamet, which was 5 of 8, Shamet from 3 points range, 5 of 8. If I can just get 10 out of him on the bench, that helps here. But if I can get that bench performance, watch out for the Suns. They might be a player here in this series.
Look, here's the reality. Chris Paul matters way more in name than actuality for this Phoenix team. That's what it is. He averages 13 points per game and 7 assists. You think KD and Devin Booker can make up 13 and 7? The answer has been obvious. They can make up a lot more than 13 and 7. The reality for the Suns, when this series ends, or when their playoff run ends, I should say, DeAndre Ayton will be moved on from, who right now is being outplayed by Jock Landale. And if Chris Paul retires or not, there's going to be a lot of very real questions around whether or not it makes sense to keep him on this team. It would be more difficult to replace Chris Paul if you weren't playing D-Book and Durant 40-plus minutes a night. But when they're both on the court every single second anyway, why would the ball really even be in Chris Paul's hands? That's the truth of it. Now, at some point, KD or D-Book might break down, and that's when you would miss CP3. But for the time being, while they're both still going full gas, they don't miss him. And what happens to the NBA is guys can step up at home. So credit for Monty Williams to not opting to play 2-on-5 basketball and at least playing some of his bench guys, something he was refusing to do all Clippers series, because role players can step up. At some point, they need an opportunity. We're getting some TJ Warren minutes. We're getting some Terrence Ross minutes, and they always should have been getting those minutes. And Landry Shamet happened to be the guy. The Landry Shamet game. That's how these things go. You're able to get bench players to step up at home. I do, though, agree with you. Again, as much as I thought that there was all of a sudden value on Phoenix, and there obviously was. This team was only minus 130, plus 2.5 games. That's a winning wager if you bet that. This team was 8-1 to win the West. It's now down to 3-1. That's a great ticket if you all of a sudden own it. But I don't trust them moving forward in this series because Denver's bench will be better in Denver. And Denver's key guys will be better in Denver as well. Whether that's Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, or Jamal Murray, who still has some road struggles. I know the 28-7 on 13 of 25 is solid, but he wasn't great in this game. And he was bad in game number 3. And right now, the biggest issue maybe for Phoenix is we look at Kevin Durant and Devin Booker as two guys in a playoff series could easily be the best player in any given series. They're both playing unbelievable basketball, Donnie, and neither have an argument to be the best player in this series. Nikola Jokic right now is hitting another level. This is the type of stuff that will make Jokic's status in this league unimpeachable. Because Jokic, while having two MVPs and some thinking he's deserving of a third, needed
to get into the playoffs and have big time success, not just statistically, but in the win column. But man, it helps when the statistical stuff looks like this. Right now in this series, 36.5 points per game, 14 rebounds, 9.5 assists. He has gone out there and dominated DeAndre Ayton to a point where this lack of depth team is benching DeAndre Ayton. Jokic is dominating this series in a way that does feel sustainable, which is bad news for Phoenix.
And the thing that you like the most, Kevin, is because when you look at Jokic, he's not the guy priced like Joel Embiid or Devin Booker or Kevin Durant, which means 29.5, 31.5 points. And he can do that, you figure, but that's really not his MO. He's that guy, Kevin, what, 24 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists. My goodness, he's dominating just in the flow and letting the game come to him. But you know how you're a good basketball player, Kevin, when you can flip the switch and go, my guys need me to score tonight. I'm going to drop 53 points in this game when that's probably double what you anticipate him actually getting. That's how you know great players can live in the moment here. And still, though, it is a tough little sting because if you're just reading the box score, you see the 36 and 36 out of Phoenix. That's what you pretty much anticipate because that's how Phoenix has to survive right now. But the fact that Jokic went for over 50 points and they lost the game is a little bit eye-opening because even he goes back to his locker and goes, I just went for 53 and 11 and we couldn't win that game. I guess everybody just has to step up around me, but my goodness, what happens when I want to score 27 points in a game? Now, granted, they won a lot of games this year with Jokic scoring 27 points or less, and they are going home. But it's one of those things where you might even felt better about Denver. It's like, hey, you know what? We lost by 5. Jokic didn't play that well. A couple guys need to step up. We'll be fine at home. But he brought his A game there, and they lost. That's a big win, Kyle. That's a big one in the win column for Phoenix, not just because they tied up 2-2, but they go, wow, their best guy just got 53 points, and we still won. Let's see what we can do in game number 5.
Now, what if I told you, though, that there's a world the Phoenix Suns are favored in Game 5? Right now, they're a 5-point underdog. But there is a question around Jokic's status for Game 5. I'm sure plenty of people are out there eye-rolling. You got to just try and take a step back, take a deep breath, and be honest with what happened. Ball goes out of bounds. I believe Josh Okogie was the one trying to save it. He goes bumbling into some fans. So the Suns owner grabs the basketball. Jokic wants to get out on a fast break, so he tries to take the ball out of the owner's hands. The owner kind of holds on to the ball, which is a bit crazy and a bit hilarious. Jokic then shoves him. Now, I'm not acting like he assaulted him. This is an honest conversation, but there's a lot of people whose takeaway from that scene was, if that wasn't the Suns owner, that guy would have been thrown out of the game. Maybe so. But that being the Suns' owner might also be why Jokic wasn't thrown out of last night's game and might be the only thing that stops Jokic from being suspended in Game 5. You don't have to like it. I don't want Jokic to be suspended. But the reality is, you tell me in your mind if you picture an NBA player going like that to somebody in the crowd and how you think the NBA would react to that. I don't think he gets suspended for Game 5, Donnie, but it is a conversation going on in the league office right now. Anybody who thinks otherwise is being naive.
And they are being naive, too, because when you look at the play itself and the fact that it is the owner, it does sort of lessen the blow. But also the owner taking a page out of Marcus Smart's playbook. I mean, sell it, man. Sell it all the way through. Might be looking at an AEW contract at this point there with the bump he took. But also, let's think a bigger picture here, Kevin. Let's just say it was the owner and he gets pushed. You saw the one fan come from behind and push Nikola Jokic. He actually was ejected from the arena, and rightfully so. But let's just say you had a crazy fan who saw that melee and just tackles Jokic or grabs him around the waist. Then everybody gets involved. The NBA would sit back and be like, we have to suspend it because the escalation was actually on Jokic. And in a fan confrontation, that's what you look at, the escalator right there. And it was Jokic. You would have no choice but to suspend him just for the rite of passage. Like, hey, guys, if we let this one go, what happens down the line? I don't think it, for the greater good of the game, he shouldn't get suspended. But my goodness, you're right. If that was an average fan, this could have been looking at a 20-game suspension with a melee in the crowd.
And again, 20, but a one game. I'll tell you this. If it was the regular season, I wouldn't have any doubt in my mind Jokic would miss a game. But it's not the regular season, and things start to change. Two more series to break down. It's coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
keeping things moving here on the early line. Again, the postseason action has been absolutely tremendous. What we make the move now, the other series in the West. Updated odds to win the Western Conference. The favorites remain the Denver Nuggets at plus 185. The Lakers, plus 210. The Suns, plus 300. The Warriors, plus 430. Remember when they moved the Warriors to favorites in the West because they beat the Kings? That was crazy. And we said it at the time. And it remains absolutely wild. There isn't a scenario on the table for Golden State to be favored in next round. That wouldn't happen. But also, Donnie, they're not getting to the next round. They might win game four. That's fine. We'll do that in hour number two. But the Lakers are the better basketball team. Anthony Davis is right now the best player in this series. And that, to me, is, I think, kind of the underrated shock that I'm not sure everybody is ultimately adjusting to here. Steph Curry went out and had one of the finest games of his career in Game 7 against the Kings. A 50-point performance. Domination and advanced his team into round two. But somehow, that performance and that performance alone readjusted NBA player rankings and shifted Steph Curry as the best player in the NBA, which is ridiculous. Steph Curry has not even been the best player, not only in this series, I'm not sure he's been the best player on his team so far in this series. And that is where you look up, and I'm not acting like this is all on Steph, by the way. It's a credit to Anthony Davis. While he was very bad in game number two, Donnie, both sides of the ball, AD has been locked in at an unreal level for two of these games, and the Lakers ended up handling their business in both of their games. Domination game three, 127-97. I think through three games, it's pretty clear the Lakers are the better basketball team.
Yeah, before the series started, I thought the Los Angeles Lakers would win this series, buoyed upon the Golden State Warriors continue to struggle on the road, and they did. And again, as I preface it, Kevin, it was like, man, that was so close, man. We only lost by a point. They got wasted in that game, which is what the Golden State Warriors have done all year long. Now, let's get back to this point and have a little bit of fun with this one. I don't know who was starting it, but it was getting legs on Twitter, social media, and also on TV. Hey, you know what? If this series goes the way some think it's going to be, where the Golden State Warriors beat the Lakers, we got to start putting, you know, Steph Curry above in the conversation of LeBron James. Because what's always the conversation been? Best player of all time, LeBron James and Michael Jordan. So what people are actually saying now is if the team gets by the Los Angeles Lakers, then Steph Curry decides to be, or excuse me, should be ahead of LeBron James, which means he's then in the same conversation with Michael Jordan. I love this because it makes for fun content to talk about, even though so how ridiculous it is. But just getting back to the points, and also, Kevin, looking at that game, I'm going, checking the box score during the game. Is LeBron playing? Did he get hurt? Did he get ejected here? Because apparently D'Angelo Russell was the only guy on the Los Angeles Lakers for the first couple minutes of the game. Now, also, if you remember me talking about last week, Kevin, in order for teams to win basketball games, of course we know Anthony Davis is going to play well. At least we think he's going to continue to play well. It's been wonderful in the playoffs. You take a look at LeBron James. We expect a certain level of excellence from him. But every once in a while, the guy I keep pointing out is D'Angelo Russell. If he does, look, he only scored 21 points. I say only in a fashion where he didn't go off like James Harden popping 35, 40 points in these games. Mm-hmm. But if you can get 5 of 8 from three-point range from D'Angelo Russell, every single thing on that Lakers team opens up here. And when these players play, and you even brought this up in the past, hey, don't look for D'Angelo Russell to do this on the road. Look for him to do it at home. If I'm getting this type of performances out of D'Angelo Russell, the sky's limit as long as LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I'm not even saying, Kevin, play great basketball. As long as they're available to play great basketball, that's a big sign for the Lakers here. Loved what I saw Saturday night, but I have to say this. I'm not surprised that the Lakers beat the brakes off of the Warriors at home.
The D'Angelo Russell stuff, we talked about that. It's like, man, when is D'Lo going to pop off? When they get home. D'Lo has 6 games this postseason with 15 or more points. Lakers are 6-0 in those games. They just need a third guy. Just need a third guy to show up. By the way, I'm glad you did bring up the whole LeBron-Steph thing. I'm just curious how this is supposed to work. Because Steph Curry was apparently playing the best basketball of his career, entered this series where he could unseat LeBron on the NBA's Mount Rushmore, clowns,
and is now not even outplaying LeBron in the series, much less winning the series. So how does that work? Is Steph now the sixth best point guard of all time? Do we readjust the rankings like that? Should we take some titles away from Steph Curry? I just want to know how it works. Is this how LeBron passes Jordan for people? Because he beat Steph Curry in round two? Probably not, right? Probably not. So, again, that stuff was always ridiculous. But that is also another piece of this puzzle right now. The Warriors need Steph Curry to be the best player in this series. Look, here's a little spoiler for you. I think Steph is a really big game number four. So we'll get to that later. But he's not been better than LeBron. And LeBron right now is taking that backseat to Anthony Davis. He was good. He was really good in this game, LeBron. 21 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. Vintage LBJ, right? The efficiency was there. 6 of 11 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, 7 of 8 from the line. But he's taking that backseat a little bit here. And it's working for the Lakers. I want to ask you this question, then we'll get over to Knicks Heat. If you were to look at the Western Conference where everything sits right now, do you think Denver should be the favorite in the West? Or the Lakers should be the favorite in the West?
It still should be Denver. Denver's the number one overall seed. Denver's the best team in the NBA at home. Denver's still tied up 2-2, which is where many people probably thought they would be regardless of injuries at the end of that. I still believe that the Lakers, a formidable opponent here that can certainly beat the Denver Nuggets, but if I just think we're looking at that snapshot right now, I would still give it to the Nuggets here being the best team in the West, or at least favored to win.
I think the edge for me and why the answer would be Denver is they've played four games in that series. The Lakers have only played the third, right? So if the Lakers were to lose tonight's game, which is on the table, then it would look like a real mistake to push the Lakers up to the favorites. But if the Lakers do go up 3-1 tonight and would obviously then be the biggest series favorite in the West, there would be consideration. The difficult thing is, on a pre-series price, I don't see how the Lakers are favorites over Denver or Phoenix due to not having home court advantage. It's not mattered so far for them in their series, but when you're projecting out, they're not going to be favored to beat Denver, and they're not going to be favored to beat Phoenix. But the Lakers right now, I think, do look like the best team in the Western Conference. Do the Heat look like the best team in the Eastern Conference? They might. They certainly don't look like an eighth seed. The New York Knicks, the idea was, man, they got to be happy that Milwaukee's been eliminated. And by the way, that's true. The Bucks were the best team in the NBA. The Bucks would have been a very tough spot for the New York Knicks. The problem is, the Heat, also a tough spot. Because the Heat have the best player in this series in Jimmy Butler. And he gave him 28 points. But it's not just Jimmy. Bam Adebayo right now has been better than the Knicks' second option. And Eric Spoelstra is so by far and away the best coach in the Eastern Conference, it's almost laughable. When you look, again, it's Thibs, Doc, Mazzulla, and Eric Spoelstra. My goodness, that list doesn't even seem like we're talking about the same sport. If you tiered them off, it would take you forever to get from Spoelstra's tier one to when you start the next tier with those three guys remaining in the playoffs here. He dominate this series and are now minus 240 to win this series.
And they should be. And apparently, as long as Jimmy Butler plays, they're going to continue to be the better basketball team. And also, Julius Randle had a very good regular season. Usage rate high. Efficiency okay. 4-15 from the floor, Kevin. 0-5 from three-point range. Only comes up with 10 points. But look at the statistics here from the Knicks as a team, Kevin. 34% from the floor, 20% from three-point range, 72% from the line. And they get wasted here. Look, it's one thing when you just have a bad game coming up. But doesn't it feel like that there's going to be continuous bad games for the Knicks? Or maybe it's just the Miami Heat play that good of defense and just have the tempo down. It's because when the Knicks get that first win against Cleveland and you move past that series, you go, wow, we actually expected to, you know, come up against the Bucks and maybe that wasn't going to work out so well. But the simple fact that you play the Miami Heat here and it clearly looks like the Heat are the better team. The Heat actually in game two, Kevin, were saying, you know, just come take this game from us here. We'll show up and see what happens. And for majority of that game, the Miami Heat actually had the lead over the Knicks. Now Jimmy Butler comes back and they waste him. That psychological advantage is so big for the Miami Heat that wouldn't it just seem surprising? Like the Knicks actually, to me, win another game in the series. That's just the way it feels to me, Kevin.
So, this is what's so interesting, though, right now, in that we have, and again, the NBA playoffs have been so phenomenal. The other two series sit at 2-2, right? These two that we just talked about are 2-1. And it feels like, man, the Lakers and the Heat are way better.
But a road win for the Knicks or a road win for the Warriors, and you go, uh-oh, right? Home court flips, back home game five for that team. It's incredible how quickly it can shift. And the Knicks have been incredible. We've talked about this all year long on the road. But I think the thing for the Knicks that feels so difficult, for Golden State, right? Steph Curry can step up and have a monster game. For the Phoenix Suns, Booker and Durant can step up and have this monster game. Embiid, Harden. It's not that the Knicks don't have a guy, but who do you really trust? Even if Brunson has a big one, can anybody really trust Julius Randle right now? I think there's a world where Randle does have a really big game, but he's been so bad in his playoff career. This is my thing where we talk, you know, with home court advantage. If the Knicks did grab tonight's game, I'm not telling you with certainty that they're winning game five back home, right? Like, that's the difficult thing of it all here, where it's like, look, man, trust me, the Knicks are going to be able to keep them off now and protect home court. No, no, I don't trust that from the Knicks right now, and it's because their top-end guys aren't trustworthy. Bam and Jimmy Butler outscored on their own, the two of them, Barrett, Brunson, and Randall, the three of them. And the role players here as well. Again, I think this was really missed by people heading into the series, where I understand the Knicks have depth, right? Emmanuel Quickley in the race for sixth man of the year, even though a lot of that had to do with the games he started. Obi Toppin has had himself a solid season. You know, your Josh Hart, your Quentin Grimes, these other guys filling in around him. Miami's depth are proven guys, or at the minimum, they have a lot of experience. Kyle Lowry, NBA champion. Kevin Love, NBA champion. Martin, Vincent, Duncan, Strus. The amount of postseason games under the belt for Miami is so much greater than this New York Knicks supporting cast.
Yes, and also when you take a look at the supporting cast for the Miami Heat, look at the bench players here. Kevin, plus 7, plus 5, plus 13, plus 6, plus 8. Nobody was a minus. Even if you had, you know, guys playing 1 minute here, it doesn't really, you know, Yurtsevin and Jovic, I mean, not a big deal. But when you are going to get that performance, because I look at the starting lineup and I say, I don't understand how the Miami Heat even work. But the proof is in the pudding here. You dispatched, which I thought was the best team in the NBA, the Bucks, and it looks like you're on the way to dispatching the Knicks. And I still look at the Heat going like, they're not really a formidable opponent here to win the Eastern Conference, are they? To win an NBA championship? Oh. And every single, if they get gentleman sweeps, Kevin, in the first two series of the playoffs, I mean, you can't start to doubt, or excuse me, you know, start, you know what? They're not going to do it next series. Why not? And let me just say this.
Yeah.
If the Sixers somehow get behind, or excuse me, somehow get past the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference final, lose to the Miami Heat, I'm going to absolutely lose my mind at that point. But again, it's not as if it's an underdog story for the Heat if they go 4-1, 4-1 to start the playoffs.
If it doesn't matter, Philly or Boston, if either, whatever one of those teams comes out of it and they see Miami next round, if anybody out there goes, let's go, we've got Miami, they must not be allowed to show that game in your house.
Yes.
There is no way anybody's excited about playing the Miami Heat in the playoffs. Yeah, no, they're not. Only the Maple Leafs would. Only the Maple Leafs, man. Only the Maple Leafs here. We had a little Kentucky Derby to close out the opening hour here on a Monday.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Closing out hour number one here on the early line. The Kentucky Derby was this weekend. 16-1 Mage comes in. DRS excitement levels for the Kentucky Derby? Were you in the mix? Were you loving the scenes?
No, it was fantastic. I mean, the one thing, I was really analyzing the ride by Javier Castellano, and it was just fantastic here, the way he closed down the backstretch here, holding off a few horses and really going to the whip early. That's the way you're supposed to do it in a big-time race, Kevin. No doubt about it. Winner here for a Mage.
Look, the Kentucky Derby can always deliver the pomp and circumstance. The Pat Mahomes riders up moment, I don't think that hit the way people thought it was going to. I don't know. That didn't land for me personally. That's not even Mahomes hate.
What was the connection to Mahomes? I mean, come on, man. I mean, at least put Rick Pitino out there to do something.
I don't think that they're looking for Kentucky legends when they're trying
to Will Levis. I mean, put Will Levis out there. You know what I mean? Lamar Jackson, somebody.
You got to imagine Will Levis finds a way to mess that up, though.
Oh, no. They give Will Levis, like, hey, look, it's going to be a lot of fun, man. You're going to throw the football to, like, a jockey over there, and Will Levis airmails the jockey, like, live on TV from, like, 13
jockey
feet away.
Jockey falls off the horse trying to catch the Will Levis pass.
I mean, somewhere, like, Chris Rodriguez is diving in trying to get the football out of nowhere. Like, where'd that guy come from, you know?
I just pulled up on a good one. I'll tell you later. You could probably figure it out. Are you excited for the Preakness now? I mean, you can't miss. Mage, here we go. Triple crown. Let's get it.
Yeah, see, the Preakness, I actually don't mind as long as there is a horse that's going to be in the race with a chance for a triple crown. But we've seen in the past, like, you win the Kentucky Derby and skip the Preakness. I mean, that should be an absolute fine where your trainer should never be allowed. Okay. I can't say, you know, I was going to go down a dark path there with horses, but I can't. I'm trying to be positive today on the show. Come on.
Here's what I will say. For those that don't know, the actual favorite for the race was scratched pretty late there.
Yes.
So I think Mage should sit it out, let the favorite get in the mix, win the Preakness, and they'll just go head-to-head.
One-on-one. That's
exact one-on-one style at Belmont, baby. Hour two coming up.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.